today. Good to see you here. So today we're going to do some test review. There is no new material on the schedule for today. Before we begin though, are there any comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? Nope. All right. So, I'm just going to go through what we have in lecture notes for today. So, test Monday here, right? We've done this before, just like last time. I've written here, you should already know about LNEC and excused absences. I have been getting more responses to the absences form recently, so I'm going to make an arbitrary cutoff this evening. So if you believe you deserve an excused absence, I sent an announcement. It's on Colab. It should also be in your email about how to tell me about that. Do that before this evening so that I can make arrangements and contact you about that. LNEC, you should already have contacted them. If you haven't, do that soon. Yeah. So, what will be on the test? Roughly speaking, the stuff since the last test. Arrays, array lists, writing methods, writing classes. Okay? That will suggest that you know how to write a loop, because it's hard to do an array without a loop, and so on. So all the stuff from before will still apply, but my goal is not to test the stuff from before, just to test the new stuff. Okay? So, there will be questions involving coding and questions that do not involve coding. There will be questions where it is not totally obvious exactly what you need to do. So you may have to solve some problems, right? We'll describe what the code should do, but not necessarily how. There will be questions where you look at code and tell us what it does or fails to do. Some things you don't have to worry about. Because we've lost so far 3 days due to snow and one lab, we're a little behind where we expected to be. So we will not ask you to write a complete class implementation like we did in lab yesterday on this test. That will wait for the final. So you can look forward to that then. However, pieces of classes are fair game. Any of the pieces of a class, right? So we may ask you to write a method or two. We may ask you to write a constructor to define the fields, etc. The pieces of a class are certainly available. We won't retest the kinds of questions we would on test one, but you need to know all that material. It didn't go away. It's still applicable. You also still don't need to know any import statements. If at any point along the way in your taking the test you think you need to say something about import statements, you're wrong. Okay, so don't worry about that. So what will be on the test? Arrays and array lists. So you should know how to define, create, store, and read from an array. And there's a couple code samples there in lecture 16. It's very brief. If that is a little confusing to you, listen to the lecture notes or look in the textbook on arrays, which will also hopefully help you out quite a bit. You should know about split and reading CSV files. After a few homeworks, that should be fairly automatic, but you should still know how to do it. You should know how to both read and write array code. So I should be able to ask you to write code dealing with arrays, and you should be able to do it. I should be able to ask you to look at some code about arrays and tell me what it does, and you should be able to do that too. For 2D arrays, we mentioned them briefly, an array can have an array inside of it. You should know how to read code that deals with 2D arrays, but you shouldn't necessarily need to know how to write that code. Okay? So if I show you code where an array has an array inside of it, you should be able to tell me what it does, but you shouldn't necessarily need how to create that. Array lists, you should be able to use them like you use arrays, and you should know what the difference is between them. Right? So get and set versus the square brackets, size versus length, and you should have some familiarity with the basic thing arrays can do otherwise, such as index of and add, contains. Okay? And I've linked to a little comparison chart there. You're welcome to review. Any questions you want to ask me about arrays or array lists? Okay. Methods. Oh, yeah, sorry.
When setting up an array list, do you, and like defining it, do you have to define something in it initially, or can you just sort of have it?
Good question. All right, so the question is, when defining an array list, do I have to define it with something in it? So let's make a Let's make a little class we can play with. Okay? So, I should probably spell review correctly. It doesn't matter. All right, so, defining an array list. How do I define an array list? Well, it needs to be an array list. You ask, do I need to put something in it? I do need to specify what type should go in it. Okay? There are some times you can leave that out and nothing will break. But in general, you should always define its type. So I need to say that this is an array list that stores... How about colors? Okay? So that defines the variable. That declares the variable. If I want to actually put something in the variable, I would then say list equals a new array list of color. But I cannot create an array with things in it, at least not very easily. There are other constructors for array lists, including one that allows you to create an array of stuff in it, but you have to set up all kinds of stuff before you can do that. So generally, array lists are created empty. Arrays are created at a fixed size with either zero, false, and null in them, or they're created at a fixed size with all of their elements specified. Okay, and of course, usually we write these two pieces on one line, although you're always allowed to split them in half if you want. Does that answer the question? Are there other questions about how we create array lists? Yes? Concerning like ifs and nulls, I know you said like All right, so we mentioned that an array list cannot be declared to store a primitive type. I cannot say array list int. Okay? Does not work. This is because the ArrayList class, or family of classes, must store inside of it a list of where to find values. Okay? It will not allow us to actually store the values, only allow us to store where to find them. Okay? Ints, as primitive types, go directly in boxes. I cannot put them in ArrayList. So instead there is an integer class. Somebody wrote a class called integer. All the integer has inside of it is one int. And then a handful of methods for interacting with that int. And that allows me to put the integer in the array list. They wrote the class integer really early in Java, just one version ago, version 6. They finally decided that maybe version 5. They added a little more support for integers in the language, so we can basically ignore the difference between integer and int in our code. It will automatically take the int out of the integer object or put it in as needed for methods to be invoked. Okay? So usually we can treat them the same, but when we are creating a list, we must use the class version, which is where to find the integer instead of the primitive version. And that's pretty much the only place we use the class version. There's a couple other places, but for the most part, that's where we use it. Does that answer the question? Yes. All right. Other questions about arrays, array lists, or this code? Okay. Arrays and array lists. That will be on the test. Methods. You should know the parts of a method. Okay? So you should know that there's a public versus private. There might or might not be a static. You should understand the idea of a return type, void being a valid return type, name, parameters, and body. Okay? Where body is where we write our code. Everything before that can be called the header. Okay? And you should know what all of those terms mean, right? You should know what public versus private means. Public, of course, meaning that any class can use it. Private, meaning only the class I'm writing right now can use it. Static, meaning it is not part of the behavior of an object. It just sort of exists out there. Non-static, without that, it means it's part of a particular object. Describes how one of these things behaves. Return type, hopefully we know what return type means, so it comes back or doesn't come back if it's void. Name, anything you want. Parameters look like variable declarations. Type, name, comma, type, name. Body is code. Okay? So you should know all those pieces, be able to identify them, and tell what they do. You should know the difference between defining a method, saying public int add parentheses int x int y, defining the method, and invoking the method. Something dot add parentheses 3, 4. Right? You should know the difference between those two, which one's which. Both the name defining and invoking, and how to use them. You should understand return statements, which give back a value and stop the method. Okay? and all the paraphernalia associated with this, such as after we stop the method, we can't have more code, so you can't have a statement after return statement, all that kind of stuff. And that you have to have a return statement in a non-void method. You don't have to have one in a void method, but you may if you want. And you should know, sort of a more applied thing, you should be able to both write a method. We'd say, we want a method that does X, and you should be able to write it. And you should be able to read a method. We show you a method, and you tell us what it does. Questions about methods? Yes? Parameters and arguments, certainly. Parameters and arguments differ the same way defining and invoking a method does. So, okay, when I define a method, I define it with parameters. Public int add, int x, int y. X and y are parameters. X, I'll write that here. X, oh, and y are. Okay? Let's make this static so I don't have to create an object to use it. Okay? X and Y are parameters. They are the names I use to refer to whatever I am provided. They're just names, just local things for this implementation, for the purpose of being able to describe what it does. Down here, I might say, I'm going to regret having spelled this re-re-re-re-re here in a moment. Okay, so I could add 3 and 4. 3 and 4 are arguments. Okay, so the values I give the method when I invoke it, those are called arguments. The things I call them when I'm running them, they are called parameters. So I could also, for example, do this. So 3 comma w in my add invocation. I don't need to rename this here. Okay. So the values 3 and 7 are the arguments. Sometimes I'll say the variable w is an argument. Its value is actually what gets passed in, not the variable itself. Do you want me to say more about that? Nope. Other questions about these methods, parameters, arguments, any of that? Yes?
Can I have to go back to an ArrayList?
Please.
Can you go over how to add things to an ArrayList?
How do you add something to an ArrayList? List.add color.red. Hooray, I added something to an ArrayList. Do you want me to speak about how that works?
For, like, specifically for, I had an ArrayList for integers, and when, and when it was, and then it's asked to initialize it, and initialize the email, but then when I try and do that name dot add, and then just put an int inside of it, it doesn't. Yeah.
Something's not working with that code in your code? Okay, it's worth knowing a little bit about this code, right? So many of you in your homework 5, you wrote the integer here, but you didn't write it here. That sometimes works. Newer versions of Java, that won't work anymore. It does in old versions of Java. I actually had to tell my version that I'm testing your code in to pretend like it was an old version, because most of you are running old version. You should always have the full name of the type both places. The full name of the type is ArrayList of integers. It is not just ArrayList, okay? And then we can add things. There's also, of course, another add method that also takes an index of where we want to put it, so we can put things in particular spots inside our list. Okay, so we can give it an index and a value, and then when we print the list, we will see that they got added without something gets added to the end, with something gets added to be in that index after the add. So we have both of those techniques. We can add the 11, the 13, and the 34, but we add the 34 first, then we add the other ones in front of it. Okay. All right, other questions so far? Methods, arrays, array lists. Yes? On the quiz, can I answer question? The quiz that's currently out, that's not due until tomorrow? the methods quiz? Probably. I hope I can. I wrote the quiz. Let me look it up. Quiz. Quiz 6. Methods. Begin assessment. Question 4. Okay. Consider the following code statement. Ah, yeah, this is a fun one. All right, let me copy this over so we can see it more largely here. Okay, so what we had was, consider the following code snippet. Here was our code snippet. Let me make this look pretty. Do we know what main will print even if we do not know what example.f does? I'm going to change that because I wrote it here. Okay. So, do we know what it will print even if we don't know what the function does? Yes, we know what it will print. No, we don't know what it will print. All right, so most of you think, yes, what will it print? A equals 3, B equals 4. Why? Okay, let's actually add some implementation of f here. Public static int f, int a, int b, I don't care what we call this. Oh, return 17. Let's do more. Let's say a equals 11, b equals 12, return 17. Here's an implementation. What happens when I run this code? In main, I have two variables, A and B, and the A box is a 3, and the B box is a 4. I then create a new activation record, a new piece of memory for F. In F, I have two boxes also, an A box and a B box. The A box has a 4, the B box has a 3. They are passed in as the arguments. I change what's in the boxes of the F's memory to be 11 and 12. I give back from that a 17, but I don't do anything with the 17 that comes back because I don't save the value of calling f to any variable. It just goes away, and the memory for f also goes away when f is done. So the fact f had boxes and did stuff is completely lost, and then I print out the variables a and b in main's memory, which have never been touched.
Could you have a void method that changes?
Yes, could I have a void method that changes the value of A and B? Let's just do that. Great. I have a void method that changes the value of A and B. But which A and B does it change? It changes the ones in F's memory. F has its boxes. It changed F's boxes. It did not touch main's boxes. Okay? So if we can see this, we run this. And we see, indeed, main is printing main's variables. Now, I could go in here, and I could print out, what does f see? Okay? I'll see f initially sees 4 and 3 in its memory, then it sees 11 and 3, then it sees 11 and 12, then it's done, those variables go away, and main still sees the original values. Yes? Oh, sorry, that was not a hand, that was just a pointing.
Why does it say A equals 4 at first, and then it says A equals 3?
Why does it say A equals 4 first? Which method is printing out A equals 4? Let's make this more clear. Let's put F here for each of these. So F is running these here, and main is running this one. Let's also do that here. Okay. Main sees A is 3, B is 4. F sees A is 4, B is 3. Why does F see them in the other order? Because I passed them in the other order. The first argument I gave F was the value of B, a 4. And F saved that as A. Okay? The fact they have the same name is entirely irrelevant. It doesn't matter. So, right, I could just change this name here. Let's change it to Grufel. Okay? And this will do exactly the same thing, right? The fact that they happen to have the same name was incidental. did not change the code in any way. Other questions about this? Yes?
Well, it wasn't about this.
Oh, about other things. I'm happy to take questions of all sorts. Static and non-static attributes, certainly. Okay. In general, what does static mean? Static means not part of an object. Okay? Let's do an example. Let's do a class. How about we make a human class? Okay? I have a class human. We want to talk about attributes. What is an attribute of humans? What's a field of human types? What? Height? Okay. Public. Oh, I shouldn't make them public. I should make them private. Int height. Okay? Each human has a height. We're going to pretend like all humans have integer heights, and you just suddenly jump from being one height to another. Now, what's something that's true of humans but shared by all humans?
Alive.
Alive?
Yes.
That is not shared by all humans. If it was, we wouldn't have medical school, right? Is there something that's true of all humans but not true of things that aren't humans? Sorry? How about private Boolean sentient? Okay, what does sentient mean? It means able to think about yourself, roughly. Self-aware. Okay? All humans everywhere share the same amount of sentience. At least that's what we like to pretend. Okay? Any human you happen to meet, we believe is sentient. If they are not sentient, we call them dead. So perhaps this isn't quite perfect, right? We could do, how about other things? How about private, static, string, species? Species equals homo sapiens. Sapiens? Sapiens? I don't know how to spell sapiens. Does anybody know how to spell sapiens? Sapiens. Something. Homo. Homo dot dot dot. Okay. How about Homo erectus? I can spell the Neanderthals species. Okay. Alright, so actually, we're at it. Let's just rename these Neanderthal. Okay. Now, so we have Neanderthals. Each Neanderthal has its own height. All Neanderthals are either sapient or not, sentient or not. All Neanderthals share a species. Okay? So sentience and species are static fields. We could make them final, except that anybody that's talked to biologists knows somebody will change their mind about these two fields at some point, and we'll just decide that actually all Neanderthals were not sentient. Who knows, right? It could happen. But if we decided of one, we decided of all. It's a static field. Static fields are pretty rare. It's unusual to have code that uses static fields. They're not constants like pi. But you can if you have something that should be shared of all of the objects of that class. Does this answer the question?
Somewhat. I was also hoping that you could describe why you use a static method. For example, on the homework, all the methods were static, but it seemed like they would have been a lot easier if you used attributes.
All right. Why would I make a static method? And why was it static on the homework? I could have written the homework where instead of having a set of static methods that do stuff, I made a class describing, I don't know, maps. A map class. And use a constructor to create your map class. And it has a bunch of fields and a bunch of non-static methods to make your map look nice. I didn't do that because the homework came out before you knew how to write classes. Okay? It was an exercise in writing static methods. In general, how do you make static methods? There's some of the methods there that would have been static even then. Read CSV. Okay? Read CSV does not obviously belong to any other class. It's just sort of a method I want to be able to do. Kind of like square root, okay? Taking the square root of a number, I might put that in the number class, except there isn't a number class, because the numbers are primitives. So I store it somewhere, I can do it for whatever number you happen to give me. Okay? So static methods are usually used for sort of service, a library of things, a behavior that exists but is not associated with any particular type of object. It is always possible to change between having static and non-static methods by changing how fields work and what is parameters and not. Okay? So it's somewhat a matter of choice. But in general, a method will be static if you want it sort of as a service to provide to people, and it will be non-static if it's a behavior of a particular type of object. Does that answer that question-ish? Okay. Other questions? Yes?
Can you talk about how you would incorporate
How would I incorporate a constructor into this class? Certainly. In general, when I make constructors, there's some things that are always true. And constructors always have no return type and the same name as the class. Okay? They can have however many parentheses I want to have make them have. And they should set up, they should assign values to all of the fields or attributes of the object. Okay? So each new Neanderthal should be initialized, and perhaps every new Neanderthal should not have a height of 0. Let's say that the average Neanderthal is, I don't know, how about 173 centimeters? Okay? The average height of a Neanderthal, I actually have no idea how tall Neanderthals were, but I could also have another one where you tell me how high your new Neanderthal is. I can have as many of these as I want, as long as they all have distinct parameter types. Okay? And each constructor should, doesn't have to, but should, assign values to all of the non-static fields. Very rarely will there actually be any static fields to deal with. But if you've got them, you don't need to worry about standing them in a constructor, because the constructor will be run for every new Neanderthal. And in general, creating a new Neanderthal does not change the sentience of all existing Neanderthals. Do you want me to say more about the constructor?
No, you're
good. All right. Other questions? Yes? Getters and setters, certainly. I'll just use the ones that Eclipse creates for me. Okay? Getters and setters. What do getters and setters look like? They usually look the same. They either return the field or they set the field. That's it. If they are doing something more than that, it is because you want to control access to the field. Okay, so for example, I might say here, if the height you provided me is less than 0, then the height you provided me equals 0 instead. Okay, so I might do some sort of, okay, look, you can't have a negative height Neanderthal. You give me negative 15, I'll pretend you meant it had no size at all. Do something like that. But beyond a little error checking, it's unusual to see any significant code in a getter setter. Yes? Good question. There are multiple ways I could have written this code. Should I have written this.height? In this case, no. So the first one, the height that does not have the this dot in this code is referring to this variable right here, the height variable. Okay? It is not referring to this is height. It is referring to the local parameter height. If I put this dot in front of it, it would be referring to the general one. So I could put this dot height here and do that like so. This accomplishes the same purpose as the other one. Okay? So if I just said height equals 0 in my if statement, I've changed the variable that I'm about to assign to this as height. And if I just set it, then I skip that step, basically. Either one of these is fine. Do you want me to speak more about the how they're similar or different? Nope. Yes? Why I have constructors? The purpose of the constructor is to set up a new object. If I don't have a constructor, Java will give me one for free, which will set all attributes to zero, false, or null. It is unusual to want all of your attributes to be zero, false, or null. And so usually I want constructors that let me set up objects where they don't have zero, false, or null as their fields. Yes? I cannot use get height and set height interchangeably. Why does this subpublic not highlighted? That's strange. Anyway, I cannot use them interchangeably. So let's see that. Over here, let's make ourselves a Neanderthal. Let's just make a default Neanderthal that's 173 centimeters tall. Okay. And suppose I wanted to print out my Neanderthal's height. If I use get height, it'll give me back the height, because that's what I said get height does. Get height returns the height. Okay? On the other hand, if I were to try to use set height here, it would not work. For two reasons. One is, I would have to put a number here, so I actually have to change how tall my Neanderthal was. And secondly, even if I did that, by making a taller Neanderthal, I still don't have a return value to print. Okay, so they do not work in the same way. One of them tells me what the value is right now. One of them changes the value to something else. And you can't mix and match them. Yes?
So if you normally use constructors to set up new objects, should you give fields initial values?
Okay. So the question is, should I have initial values for my field? Should I, for example, say 173 here when I define my field? Usually, so what does this do? If I put 173 here as the field, the value of the height field, then when I create a new Neanderthal with the sort of built-in constructor, the one that comes before I get invoked, that will be the value instead of zero, false, or null. But there is some semantic difference between how using an initializer and using a constructor works. And it is difficult to describe a case where those matter until you get to fairly advanced Java. So for most of the purposes of this class, either one would work. However, there are cases where using the initializer will sort of do the wrong thing. So I would suggest using a constructor instead. The other great benefit of a constructor is that I can have multiple constructors, including ones that set up the values with something else. So even if I said gave a value for the height field as an initializer, I would still want to have a constructor that lets me do other things so that I can make Neanderthals that are not of that height. So you can do that if you want, and often it will work well, but sometimes it's generally just not as useful or flexible as a constructor. Yes?
So will all of the methods that you write in class be non-static?
Will all of the methods I write in this class be non-static? All of the methods they're describing behaviors of my Neanderthals will be. Okay? So all of the methods where I'm talking about this Neanderthal does it or that Neanderthal does it, absolutely they will be non-static, because that's what non-static means. It's talking about some particular Neanderthal, right? So if I had, for example, a void method eat, because Neanderthals probably ate something. I don't know what they ate. I'll just say they ate a string. Okay, I don't know what it does. We'll ignore that. Be non-static. Because when I have one Neanderthal eat, only that Neanderthal eats. None of the other Neanderthals eat. The only time I put a static method here is if I either want to be shared by all Neanderthals, such as, how about Boolean get sentience? Okay? Which would return Neanderthal.sentient. Okay. So this should, sorry, this should be static. It doesn't have to be static. Okay. So a non-static method can still do what a static method does, but this can be static. I can just say Neanderthal.getSentience without talking about ends or any particular Neanderthal if I make it static. Okay. The other time I might have a static method is that it really isn't related to Neanderthal as an object at all. It's just something else I think is cool. Right? So I might have, public static int factorial of int n, and have it compute the factorial somehow. To do compute the factorial. Okay. So this would be static because it's not. I put in the Neanderthal class just because I had to put it somewhere. I probably should have put it in somewhere more interesting than the Neanderthal class. But maybe this is the way Neanderthals compute factorials and we do it differently, right? Perhaps Neanderthals can't count. I don't know. I've never met one. Right? So maybe if I talk about the Neanderthal way of computing the factorial, it's just one. Okay? And then some other class might also have sort of this service method for computing factorials. In general, if you're writing your method and you don't need to use this, if this never appears in your method, then you can make it static and make it easier for other people to use. But if it's designed to be the behavior of some object, you will be using this because that's the object that's behaving, and therefore it will be non-static. Yes, and then right behind you. Go, you first.
When do you have to specify like, the class location before you invoke the method?
When do you have to invoke the class location?
Yeah.
Okay, so anytime I try to use a field or method without saying where it is, Java will guess what I forgot to put before the period. And it has this long list. Amongst the thing it guesses is this dot and the name of my current class dot. It doesn't ever look for third-party classes, right? So if I want to invoke the factorial method from somewhere inside the Neanderthal class, I could just say factorial, okay, by itself, and amongst the things that Java will guess I forgot to type was Neanderthal dot, which is the correct thing, that's where to find it. But if I want to use the factorial class from out here, okay, from a different class, in this case from the exam to review class, I cannot put it without something because it will never guess I meant Neanderthal dot. That's not in the list of things Java will think I perhaps forgot to write. So I will have to be explicit here and type Neanderthal. Because it is annoying to try to remember what Java will guess that you forgot to write, I would suggest just always writing something in front of the dot. In all cases. Including when you technically don't need to. Because that way, you just do the same thing all the time and you never get it wrong. Yes?
So to use factorial, you don't have to create a method?
Correct. Because the factorial method is static, I can use it based just on the class and not on a particular object. Okay? So I can get the Neanderthal factorial of 7, and it is 1. I don't have to have created a Neanderthal object to do that. I could invoke it on a Neanderthal object too, and it would do exactly the same thing. Okay, so I could also ask n for its factorial, and because n is a Neanderthal, it will use Neanderthal.factorial for me. Yes?
Would you say Neanderthal.n, or is that?
Neanderthal.n, what would that mean? Neanderthal dot, so dot means inside. So that would be looking for something named n inside the Neanderthal class. So something static named n inside the Neanderthal class. And there is nothing static named n in the Neanderthal class, so it would not compile.
Okay.
Yes?
So typically if you have constructors that take in parameters, would you normally use setters to set up all the fields in that?
It is usually good practice to use your setters instead of just manually assigning the field. And the reason is this will protect me from people doing stupid things. Okay? Because my setter protects me from people giving me negative heights. If I use my setters in my constructors, I will also get that advantage in my constructors. I don't have to do that because every method inside this class has direct access to the private attributes. But it's usually a good idea to use your getters and setters even in your own class because it sort of centralizes where you have to worry about that. Okay, I will take some more questions in a moment, but I realize time is slipping by and I want to make sure we actually hit everything on the list of topics here. So let's talk about what I say you need to know about classes. Last piece here. Then we'll come back, grab some more questions, try to handle as many as we can before the time's up. So, what should you know about classes? Basic concepts, what they are, how to pick fields for classes, how to use classes in code. Okay. You should know what fields are, also called attributes or state. You should know what methods are, also known as behaviors. Okay. You should know about the special methods, getters, setters, and constructors. You should know about drawing UML class diagrams like you've done in class a couple times and in lab yesterday. You should know how to turn a diagram into code. So if I give you a diagram and say take this method and implement it or draw these fields in a class, you should know how to do that. And because there's no delays, we won't ask you to write a full class, but we may write you, ask you to write any piece of it. There's a person way in the back patiently. Yes. The last section in the textbook you will have to know for the exam is whatever it says on the schedule. I'm pretty sure that's section 7, but let's actually look. Test 2, sections 4.10 through 7.
So the end of chapter
7? Yes. There are a few sections in each chapter we didn't talk about. In particular, we didn't talk about any section that deals with J-option pain. So if you see anything about J-option pain in the section, you can just skip it. But in general, yes. Basically 5, 6, and 7, but the end of 4.10 was about CSV files, and we did that since the last test too. All right, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just create a list of questions people have, and then we'll try to handle them in order. So, you have a question.
So you said that we don't have to write a full class, because is it going to be like last session we have a full page code?
Will you have full page code? Other questions? I'll handle these after. Yes? Will we draw memory boxes? Other questions? That's it? You certainly might have full page coding questions. Who knows? Memory boxes, we explicitly said last class that is not something I'm going to test you on for this test. Knowing what they mean and how they work is important. Actually, drawing the boxes basically is hard to grade. So we won't ask you to do that. Yes? But UML boxes are certainly a valid topic for the test. Yes? How will this be graded? Very carefully. I don't know what the question means.
Well, what will be the criteria for doing well in the field for that? Can you tell us what kinds of methods
you should do? Think about lab, okay? We gave you a description of what an object ought to be able to do, said draw a UML class diagram. I think we even gave you a few little guidelines like you should include at least one getter setter. A similar kind of question will be asked, could be asked on the exam, or many of them, or something simpler, right? But however it is, we will make sure that what you write enables you to do whatever it is we said you should do. Is that it? Yes? How to what? Writing files. Reading files is a testable topic in this class. Writing files is not. All semester. Okay. Let me also comment, we are trying to find a room where we can do a Sunday review. This is proving surprisingly difficult. I'm still talking with scheduling about trying to have that happen. Assuming I can find a room, we will have a Sunday review. Probably it will be in the middle of the day, maybe noonish, because we can't get evening. I am sorry. When I find out, if I find out that one can happen, I will send an announcement so you'll know about that. Certainly optional. Otherwise, I will see you in class on Monday.